This is Anguttara Nikaya 3's Sutta 101, the Soil Remover. Bhikkhus, there are gross defilements of gold, soil, grit, and gravel. Now the soil remover, or his apprentice, first pours the gold into a trough and washes, rinses, and cleanses it. When that has been removed and eliminated, there still remain middle-size defilements in the gold, fine grit and coarse sand. The soil remover, or his apprentice, washes, rinses, and cleanses it again. When that has been removed and eliminated, there still remain subtle defilements in the gold, fine sand and black dust. So the soil remover or his apprentice washes, rinses, and cleans it again. When that has been removed and eliminated, only grains of gold remain. The goldsmith or his apprentice now pours the gold into a melting pot and fans it, melts it, and smelts it. But even when this has been done, the gold is not yet settled, and the dross has not yet been entirely removed. The gold is not yet malleable, wieldy, luminous, and still brittle, and not properly fit for work. But as the goldsmith or his apprentice continues to fan, melt, and smelt the gold, a time comes when the gold is settled and the dross has been entirely removed, so that the gold becomes malleable, wieldy and luminous, pliant and properly fit for work. Then whatever kind of ornament the goldsmith wishes to make from it, whether a bracelet, earrings, a necklace, or a golden garland, he can achieve his purpose. So too, bhikkhus, when a bhikkhu is devoted to the higher mind, there are in him gross defilements, bodily, verbal, and mental misconduct. An earnest, capable bhikkhu abandons, dispels, terminates, and obliterates them. When this has been done, there remain in him middling defilements, sensual thoughts, thoughts of ill will, and thoughts of harming. An earnest, capable bhikkhu abandons, dispels, terminates, and obliterates them. When this has been done, there remain in him subtle defilements, thoughts about his relations, thoughts... Thoughts about his relations, thoughts about his country, and thoughts about his reputation. An earnest, capable bhikkhu abandons, dispels, terminates, and obliterates them. When this has been done, then there remain thoughts connected with the Dhamma. That concentration is not peaceful and sublime, not gained by full tranquilization, not attained to unification, but is reined in and checked by forcefully suppressing the defilements. But, bhikkhus, there comes a time when his mind becomes internally steady, composed, unified, and concentrated. That concentration is peaceful, sublime, gained by full tranquilization, and attained to unification. It is not reined in and checked by forcefully suppressing the defilements. Then, there being a suitable basis, he is capable of realizing any state realizable by direct knowledge toward which he might incline his mind. If he wishes, may I wield the various kinds of psychic potency. Having been one, may I become many. Having been many, may I become one. May I appear and vanish. May I go unhindered through a wall, through a rampart, through a mountain, as though through space. May I dive in and out of the earth as though it were water. May I walk on water without sinking, as though it were earth. Seated cross-legged, may I travel in space like a bird. With my hand, may I touch and stroke the moon and sun, so powerful and mighty. May I exercise mastery with the body as far as the Brahma world. He is capable of realizing it, there being a suitable basis. If he wishes, may I, with the divine ear element, which is purified and surpasses the human, hear both kinds of sounds, the divine and human, those that are far as well as near. He is capable of realizing it, there being a suitable basis. If he wishes, may I understand the minds of other beings and persons, having encompassed them with my own mind. May I understand a mind with lust as a mind with lust, and a mind without lust as a mind without lust, a mind with hatred as a mind... A mind with hatred as a mind with hatred, and a mind without hatred as a mind without hatred, a mind with delusion as a mind with delusion, and a mind without, and a mind... Okay. The connection must not be very good. Like the wire. Do you want to go get the other wire from the other room?
I'm not sure whether there's any other wire.
This is the one wire from the room?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, well, we'll have to just make do. Okay, so a mind with delusion as a mind with delusion, and a mind without delusion as a mind without delusion, a contracted mind as contracted, and a distracted mind as distracted, an exalted mind as exalted, and an unexalted mind as unexalted, a surpassable mind as surpassable, and an unsurpassable mind as unsurpassable, a concentrated mind as concentrated, and an unconcentrated mind as unconcentrated, a liberated mind as liberated, and an unliberated mind as unliberated. He is capable of realizing it, there being a suitable basis. If he wishes, may I recollect my manifold past abodes, that is, one birth, two births, three births, four births, five births, 10 births, 20 births, 30 births, 40 births, 50 births, 100 births, 1,000 births, 100,000 births, many eons of world dissolution, many eons of world evolution, many eons of world dissolution and world evolution, thus. There I was so named, of such a clan, with such an appearance, such was my food, such was my experience of pleasure and pain, such my lifespan. Passing away from here, I was reborn elsewhere, and there too I was so named, of such a clan, with such an appearance, such was my food, such was my experience of pleasure and pain, such my lifespan. Passing away from there, I was reborn here. May I thus recollect my manifold past abodes with their aspects and details. He is capable of realizing it, there being a suitable basis. If he wishes, may I, with the divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human, see beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate, and understand how beings fare in accordance with their karma thus. These beings who engaged in misconduct by body, speech and mind, who reviled the noble ones, held wrong view and undertook karma based on wrong view, with the breakup of the body after death, having been reborn in the plane of misery, and a bad destination in the lower world, in hell. But these beings who engaged in good conduct by body, speech, and mind, who did not revile the noble ones, who held right view and undertook kama based on right view, with the breakup of the body after death, have been reborn in a good destination in the heavenly world. Thus, with the divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human, may I see beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate, and understand how beings fare in accordance with their kama. He is capable of realizing it, there being a suitable basis. If he wishes, may I, with the destruction of the taints in this very life, realize for myself, with direct knowledge, the taintless liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom, and having entered upon it, may I dwell in it. He is capable of realizing it, there being a suitable basis. Okay, so that had a big list of psychic powers. Now, this is one of the rare suttas where there's some sort of a theme of, like, defilements. Sometimes they're more coarse defilements. Sometimes they are more subtle or fine defilements. Just like the soil remover, he or she refines the gold in steps. And to my knowledge, this is the only sutta anywhere in the early Buddhist text or anywhere I've ever heard of where when it comes time to list examples of subtle defilements. Let me just read this again, because it's like the only place in the suttas. Okay. So these are called out as being subtle defilements. You won't hear this anywhere else. Okay, so listen carefully. This is your one chance, pretty much, to ever hear it. Okay? Thoughts about his country. Thoughts about his relations, like his clan. Thoughts about his reputation. That's pretty heavy, because, you know, normally we would think of, well, of course, you know, you care about your family, right? Like, who's going to not care about their family? That'd be cruel. That'd be cold. That would be, you know. Now for monks who've gone forth from the householder life, that's the context there for, you know, even set aside your family. Even set aside your family. Interestingly, not too long before the Buddha died, some invaders came to that region where his own clan lived, the Sakyans, and those invaders basically killed all of his clan, all the Sakyans. Pretty much the only survivors were the ones who ordained with the Buddha. So let's say Nanda, and there's another one, Ananda. There's a few other Sakyans as well who ordained. They would have been the only ones to escape that those invaders. So what we don't see the Buddha doing is, you know, running back to his village and saying, like, everybody, invaders are coming, watch out, you got to save yourself. No, he just, you know, he just sort of lets that all go down, even though that's his family. So that's kind of that's a really difficult, you know, theme to kind of grapple with, because, you know, it's very painful, obviously, if we know our family's in danger and we do nothing about it, you know. But here it's called out as a subtle defilement, that we are still feeling attached, that we still feel like we have to... you know, set aside spiritual progress and spiritual development, and, you know, we have to save the others. So this is one of the more difficult parts of the suttas, one of the more sad parts. This is about the only place you'll ever hear this. Okay, and also thoughts about his country. Okay, so even a patriotism towards your own country. Okay, so I might feel kind of patriotic about Canada. All right, I would prefer that the USA did not invade Canada. But if I make a big deal out of this, it'll be a defilement. I can't say anything. I can't run home to Canada and be like, why are you all using like Gmail and, you know, Google search and like, get out of there. Quit using all those American things. No, they don't want to hear it. It's like I have to be like the Buddha. It's like, if my clan's going to get invaded, it's my job to just stand back. I'm like, well, they couldn't save themselves. Oh, well. That's kind of the Buddhist thing to do. I know it sounds really weird, but that it's a subtle defilement to be attached. Okay, and thoughts about his reputation. Okay, now here's a... This is about the only time you'll ever hear this, is... Well, I don't want to get into psychology here, but if I were a psychologist, I would be qualified to tell you all about how, like, oh, there are certain personality types, and, like, they get out of bed in the morning to build up their reputation, okay? Virtually everything they say and do is reputation-building behavior. They're extremely motivated by building up their reputation. They will never say anything whereby their reputation suffered. They'll remain silent. You cannot get them to say anything whereby their reputation somehow went, you know, worse. They will not admit they're wrong. They will not admit they're made a mistake. That's an easy way to spot it. Do these people never admit mistakes, never admit they're wrong, ever? Even when they actually are wrong, they won't admit it. So that is for their reputation. If they admitted they were wrong, their reputation would look worse. Or at least that's what they think. So yeah, even thoughts about reputation are a subtle defilement, like being protective around one's reputation. So here's a very rare place where this is actually spoken of. It's a subtle defilement. I don't know. Okay, thoughts of family, thoughts about countries. Okay, ana vanyati pati samyuto. Anavanyati patisangyutto. Concerning one's reputation, about one's social standing. Literally, connected with not being disrespected. Okay, literally, connected with not being disrespected. So the samyutta thing is connected, and the anavanyati is, I guess, not being disrespected. Okay, so there are certain personality types who it absolutely, you know, the worst thing in the world is when they are not respected to them. This is called out as a subtle defilement. Okay, now I also want to read one more sutta for you as well. Okay, but if you only take away one thing here, it's like there's more gross defilements, and then we remove those, you know, gradually, and we get to these more subtle defilements. We remove those gradually, and then we finally get to concentration. It's a process of purifying, okay? And by the way, it's awesome that you all came here for this time, you know. You just trust that, you know, even if you didn't attain the jhanas, you at least removed some of these defilements. You refined it out, you know what I mean? Yeah. Okay, next sutta. Anguttara Nikaya 3.102. A goldsmith. Okay, so this is one of my favorites. Bhikkhus, when a bhikkhu is devoted to the higher mind, from time to time, he should give attention to three marks, or three nimittas, okay? Three signs, three indicators, okay? One, from time to time, he should give attention to the mark of concentration, or the nimitta of concentration. From time to time, to the mark of exertion, or the nimitta of exertion. And from time to time, to the mark of equanimity, or the nimitta of equanimity. If a bhikkhu devoted to the higher mind attends exclusively to the mark of concentration, it is possible his mind will veer toward laziness. If he attends exclusively to the mark of exertion, it is possible that his mind will veer toward restlessness. If he attends exclusively to the mark of equanimity, it is possible that his mind will not be properly concentrated for the destruction of taints. But when a bhikkhu devoted to the higher mind from time to time gives attention to the mark of concentration, from time to time to the mark of exertion, and from time to time to the mark of equanimity, his mind becomes malleable, wieldy, and luminous, pliant and properly concentrated for the destruction of the taints. Suppose, bhikkhus, a goldsmith or his apprentice would prepare a furnace, heat up the crucible, take some gold with tongs, and put it into the crucible. So the crucible is sort of like this melting pot where you melt your gold. Okay, then from time to time, he would blow on it, from time to time, sprinkle water over it, and from time to time, just look on. If the goldsmith or his apprentice were to exclusively blow on the gold, it is possible that the gold would just burn up. If he were to exclusively sprinkle water on the gold, it is possible the gold would cool down. If he were exclusively to just look on, it is possible the gold would not reach the right consistency. But if the goldsmith or his apprentice from time to time blows on it, from time to time sprinkles water over it, and from time to time just looks on, the gold would become malleable, wieldy, and luminous, pliant and properly fit for work. Then whatever kind of ornament the goldsmith wishes to make from it, whether a bracelet, earrings, a necklace, or a golden garland, he can achieve his purpose. So too, when a bhikkhu is devoted to the higher mind, from time to time he should give attention to three marks. From time to time he should give attention to the mark of concentration. From time to time to the mark of exertion. And from time to time to the mark of equanimity. If a bhikkhu devoted to the higher mind attends exclusively to the mark of concentration, it is possible his mind will veer towards laziness. If he attends exclusively to the mark of exertion, it is possible his mind will veer towards restlessness. If he attends exclusively to the mark of equanimity, it is possible his mind will not be properly concentrated for the destruction of the taints. But when from time to time he gives attention to the mark of concentration, from time to time to the mark of exertion, and from time to time to the mark of equanimity, his mind becomes malleable, wieldy, and luminous, not brittle, but properly concentrated for the destruction of the taints. Then, there being a suitable basis, he is capable of realizing any state realizable by direct knowledge toward which he might incline his mind. If he wishes, may I wield the various kinds of psychic potency. And then it repeats all those same psychic powers just from the last sutta, you know, the big long list of psychic powers. And it ends with, if he wishes, may I, with the destruction of the taints, in this very life, realize for myself, with direct knowledge, the taintless liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom. And having entered upon it, may I dwell in it. He is capable of realizing it, there being a suitable basis. Okay, so let me go back here and dwell on this part about... So if one exclusively attends to concentration, so what I take this to mean is... let's say one is meditating long enough and well enough, and one attains a jhana. Now, based upon how well the supporting causes were, developed before the jhana, how good the sila is, how good one's energy is, how good one's technique is, how settled the mind is. So that jhana, once it actually... starts, it'll sort of go for a while, hopefully a good 20 minutes, half an hour, 40 minutes, something like that. That'd be a nice long time. Every monk would be happy with you if you did that. Okay, that would pass their scrutiny. Okay, they might not really pat you on the back for it, but if it was less than 20 minutes, they'd be like, that was some pretty weak meditation, or it wouldn't be enough for them. They would feel you could do better. Now the thing is, once the power of it begins to drop off and fade away, it just gradually goes down and down and down. Let's say after your 20 minutes or the half an hour, whatever, the 40 minutes, then it will start to fade and fade and fade. And it'll fade right until you have, no energy or just about ready to fall asleep. It'll just, it's kind of like you're coming down now, And so as that energy just gets so low and you do nothing about it, it'll go to laziness. Obviously, a smart person would notice this and that it's getting low and, you got to do something different. You maybe it's time to do some investigation of Dhamma, do some vipassana, some insight, some investigating of Dhamma. Maybe it's time to contemplate the five khandhas and the three characteristics. This kind of thing that can raise some energy. Or maybe get up and walk and do walking meditation. Do something different. Okay, so that is going to save you from that laziness. Okay, now the next thing, if he attends exclusively to the mark of exertion, it is possible that his mind will veer toward restlessness. Okay, so yesterday night I gave the example of somebody on a skateboard, but all they do is they keep kind of doing the kicking motion to get the skateboard rolling, but they don't ever just stand on the skateboard and ride. Okay, so... that's like this. It's too much, kicking with the leg with the skateboard, and it's too restless. It's like, the whole fun of skateboarding was to put both feet on the skateboard and ride it. That's the fun part. When you kick with your leg, that's not the fun part. That's the fun part's when you ride the skateboard, right? Okay, so there is such a thing as too much exertion. That's the point here. And now the third thing, if he attends exclusively to the mark of equanimity, it is possible that his mind will not be properly concentrated for the destruction of the taints. Okay, so this is kind of like the third mistake here. And how I take this to mean is, if some monk or nun, all they ever do is the Brahmaviharas, but they don't really... work hard enough at, let's say, sense restraint, or they don't work hard enough at just time spent meditating, time spent formally meditating. Maybe their practice is a little sloppy or something. If they only get the Brahmaviharas, never the jhanas, they won't get that kind of powered up state of the mind that I talked about yesterday. It's kind of like a supercharged, sharp state after a jhana. And that supercharged, kind of sharp state after a jhana, you know, it might last, an afternoon or maybe a day or two if you're lucky. And that's the best time to do your investigating. You know, investigate the Dhamma, five khandhas, three characteristics, or whatever. Investigate in some way that you build up dispassion towards worldliness, dispassion towards basically continued existence in samsara. Okay, so so having achieved samadhi, it gives the mind this powered up state for doing that investigation really well. So this sutta is warning, like, you know, if you only achieve the brahmaviharas, or maybe not at all, maybe neither brahmaviharas nor jhanas, the mind just isn't all that powerful. It just won't really take much of an interest in these deeper dhammas, these kind of more unpleasant truths. You know, because it is kind of unpleasant. It's unpleasant thinking, like, yeah, everything's impermanent, everything is suffering, you know? There's not self, everything is not self. Even these nice people sitting here, it's all not self. You know, well, it's kind of a downer, you know? It's kind of disappointing, and, you know, virtually nobody wants to dwell on those things very much when it's not, like, pleasant or enjoyable. But if you just had a jhana, if you just had an amazing, wonderful, you know, absolute blast of bliss, okay, then it doesn't bother you at all because you feel so awesome. You're like, oh yeah, this is not an unpleasant truth at all in comparison to the jhana, okay? Remember my analogy there of the Simpsons there, only in comparison to Kurasti, right? So it's Then it's not hard to contemplate. It's like, you know, yeah. That's the time to do it. Okay, it's not a bitter pill to swallow in that state. So that's the time to do it.